before.
Our future business is going to be more and more the accumulation of different applications. So the Universal Windows Platform will help us to help the pilot with real-time decision-making. So our business is all about harnessing that data coming off the airplane and making good use of it.
Forza Motorsport 6 Apex is the first step in the Forza franchise moving to Windows 10. It's a focused experience that brings the best of what Motorsport has to offer to a new player on the PC. Apex is actually a proof point of what first party can do with UWP and DirectX 12.
With the Universal Windows platform, we're able to drive it at 4K and 60 frames a second, the highest fidelity we've ever delivered. The universal aspect that's a real true promise for us is the ability to write our code once. We're still going to tailor that experience so that it's the best thing you can get on Xbox, the best thing you can get on PC. But what it means is it's reduced the development time for us, and that really surfaces not only in the code that we write, but also the tool set that we get to use. And that's the thing that's going to grow the most over time. Our goal as a first party is to make sure that that platform that everyone's running on is the best one that they can deliver games on.
Moving forward, all of our games are going to be shipping on Windows 10 and Xbox. The Universal Windows platform is great for the game developers and gamers alike. It's going to become even more powerful as a way of delivering amazing experiences across all of the devices in the Windows ecosystem.
Wrap it in. All right. Hello, welcome back from the break. It's awesome to see this many people still in the room. That's cool. This session will be, just the start of the session will be quite short. It's going to be like 10 minutes on Centennial. Then I'm going to give it over to Neil, who's going to go through the IoT story. So it's going to be awesome. So, I'm going to talk about Centennial. Did anyone here try Centennial themselves? Okay, I see one. A little bit. Okay, awesome. So I'm going to show you the basics. I'm going to show you something new. It's actually pretty cool. I have a few questions for you. So who of you guys are C++ developers, or used to be? I see some, okay. Who of you guys have developed a Win32 application? A normal EXE? What about traditional .NET? Okay, awesome. WPF? What about Commodore 64? Oh, okay, cool. Okay, I'm not going to cover the Commodore 64 today, but cool. All right. I even have more questions for you. Have you guys had challenges with the uninstallation of these applications that you've been developing? Did anyone install like Super Uninstall Cleaner Pro Deluxe, $10? No? Yeah? Cool. What about RegiBloat? You love to go into the registry, try to do some magic, and then bam. Okay. What about DLL Hell? Yeah, I can see some hands like almost reaching up to the roof. That's cool. Distribution problems, you need to distribute your application, you need to host a website, and you need somewhere to download, and they need to market that kind of things. Well, we admit that some of the tools that we've been making have made it hard to address some of these issues. But we heard you, and we took your feedback, and we made something called Project Centennial. What Project Centennial does is that it takes your traditional Win32 application and it runs it through some magic and it generates an Apex. And this Apex can actually be running on Windows 10 desktop devices. The cool thing about this is that this is a new way to package and deploy traditional applications without messing up your system. You get to keep your code, so you don't need to change your code to make this work. However, you can add optional features directly from the UWP platform or the Windows platform to enrich your traditional experience. So, how does this work? Well, we developed a tool called the Desktop App Converter. We talked briefly about it in the keynote. And assuming, I don't think there was more than one and a half person who had tried the Desktop App Converter. So I'm going to show you that in action soon. What this does is that you run your existing setup file, which could be like MSI or Install Shield or Nextcopy or something, through this Desktop App Converter. It then records what your setup is doing, and it generates an apex from it. Then you can take this apex, deploy it, you can test it, and you can run it on a Windows 10 desktop, and then you can publish it and distribute it. And of course, optionally add more features from what we offer you in Windows 10. So I'm going to show you this in action. So I'm going to switch over to 2. And I'm running all the latest bits here, so this is fresh from the press. And what I've did here is that on my drive here, I'm just going to go in. Let's see. I'm going to wait. So let's see. Did I put the... This is number 2. 2, take. OK, I'm going to try another one. That's weird. No, it's, I said it's the correct one. Yeah, we should try another one, but I don't see it. It was supposed to be one more here. This is 2, yeah. This one didn't work in the earlier session as well, so. We can try this one. So this is not going to be a 10-minute session. Add 2 minutes. And then we need to switch this one to 5. OK, awesome. So I didn't do anything yet. I'm having this window open. And I'm going to go to my C drive. And you can see I have installed the Desktop App Converter. This is what you download and install on your computer. And then I'm running the Desktop App Converter with this installation file here. This is MediaPlayer Classic. Did anyone use this? OK, cool. It's a great tool. I've used it for many years, and I still love it. And it's actually a very complex Win32 application. It's just like encoding, and there's a lot of video and music and all that kind of stuff. So I have the installer here, and I'm going to run it through the Desktop App Converter. So I'm just going to cross my finger that everything is now running. This is a PowerShell script. And what it's now doing is that it's prepping the environment for the setup or the installation of MediaPlayer Classic. And then it's going to record every single thing this is doing. But the cool thing here is that it records file system changes, it records registry changes, if it's trying to do anything magic in there, records everything like this, and it adds it and uses this to generate the apex package. The cool thing is that this is now doing all this thing, but in a virtualized environment. It's running in a container. So it's all safe for your environment. We're all going green and everything like that. So let's see the last thing. It's going to, and we have successfully converted it. So let's go and see if, let's see. I've been trying this a few times. This looks like the right one. And there you can see like all of these files around there, with the exception of the apex, is the actual MediaPlayer Classic files. You don't need them around there. It's just there for the demonstration purpose that we actually use the real binaries here. And what I can do now is to go ahead and run the installer. And this is without any code changes. So the tile is just the default tile. You can, of course, change this. And you see that it got a capability, run full trust, and it also got a publisher ID, which means that I'm now having an identity. Then I can install it. It goes within a few seconds. And I can launch this. And there we have MediaPlay Classic running as UWV Apex on Windows 10 desktop. What do you think about that? It's cool. We did a lot of work to get there. OK, so I'm going to jump back to my slides. Let's see, that was probably 3. Looks right. So how does it work? I already told you guys that it's running the setup. It could be an MSI. It could be any kind of setup, any way to install this. And it records what it does, and it virtualizes this in an app container. But there's something more. It runs with full trust on the system. It got an identity. This means that you now get access to the vast range of Win32 APIs and Universal Windows Platform APIs directly from your application. You can still do everything the application used to do, like writing to the registry. It's just that it's virtualized, so it's just safe for your environment. So you don't need to be afraid that you can't do that anymore. It's still possible. Some of you guys requested that you want to call UWP APIs from your Win32 application. And with Project Centennial, we open up the entire, or a lot of the features of Windows 10. We used to have some of them available for you guys before, for Win32, but now we added like Cortana, notification, live tiles, and all that kind of stuff. The way you call this is that you just directly call these APIs from your code, or you can write custom UWP components that you add to your solution. This is all possible because your application is having identity. You can go even further. You can take your existing business logic, and you can split it into 2 different parts. So you can have one version which got, or one part that got your existing Win32 business logic. And then you can have another part, which is a UWP component that actually uses SAML UI to actually create a SAML user interface for your application, or even calls to notifications, Cortana, and so on. The way these communicate with each other is that they're in the same app container, they share the same identity, but they're using an app service to communicate with each other. So I'm going to show you another demo. Switch back, it was 6, I think. 5. Relearning how to walk. Awesome. And also, I need some sound on 2. I haven't started yet, but just for your information. All right. So here we are. We still have our MediaPlay Classic running as the Centennial app package. And I'm going to open a file here. I'm pretty sure you guys know this song. See? Yeah? It works. This is awesome. So I'm going to click this. Thank you. So I'm just going to hit pause here. And I'm going to show you some code. And MediaPlay Classic is a C application written in C. So what I have here is some C code. And you can see the entire binaries of this open source project here. So you can just try to do this yourself as well. You can download it and check out the source code. And what we did here is that we added a universal Windows component to this called MPCHCUWP. And this is just doing a simple thing. It adds a live tile to our application. So this function here is called from the function in MediaPlay Classic that plays a song. So when you play a song, this function will be called. And what this function is taking as parameters is the image path of the cover art. This is all provided by the code inside of MediaPlay Classic. And then it takes the title of the song and the author. And then we do some XML magic. I'm not sure Have you anyone created a live tile on a Windows app before? So you guys know there's some XML there. It's not much, but you need to set some properties of the live tile, like, for example, what image you want, what format you want, do you want any text on it? In that case, how many text? Do you want a title? So what I'm doing here is that we've written a couple of lines that just create some XML. It's using this input that we sent into the function to get the image, to get the author, and then we create the tile using the Windows Store APIs. And you can see this here. We actually create a few tiles. You can see we have three different ones here. One is the wide one, and then you have one small, and then you have the normal one. And we update all of them. And then in the end, we are using the tile updater here to update the live tile of our application. Since I just played a song and it's on pause, I can go in here. And you can see the tile here is now changing between two different modes. One is the cover art, and the other one is the information about the song. So let me switch back to my machine. Awesome. So I encourage you guys to try this out. We're still actively developing this project. It's not done yet. It's a work in progress, but it's getting really good. And it's all available for you, so you can go here and download it. It's just AKMS Converter. You can try it out. And then there's this link down there. You can take a picture of it, because we really want your feedback on this project. We really want you to try different installers, if it's Install Shield, Burn, whatever you guys are using. Try to see if it works. Give us your feedback. Help us develop and make this product good. All right, that's everything I had to give you today. Thank you very much. And I'm going to give it over to Neil.
Here.
Okay, you can use that.
So here we are. It's 4 o'clock, and I could spend my time going through slides, but I thought rather than doing that, we should go through a few little scenarios with IoT. Is that a good idea, or do you want to just go through lots of slides? No more slides. So there we are, a slide. So what I want to do is, so from this morning, a few things I would like to just quickly just go through that we didn't have time to cover. So around the Azure IoT Suite, you know, we went through the steps of how you can actually go and create and select a particular scenario. Behind the scenes, then Azure will then build you up all these services like IoT Hub, Stream Analytics, Storage, the Document DB, SQL Server, all these things, configure them with code. But what's actually happening behind the scenes? So behind the scenes, all the services are being created. But for you, obviously, you're probably not that happy with the device dashboard as it currently stands. You probably want to make a number of changes. Well, how do you do that? So one thing I didn't show you, and at this point, my machine decides to, that's annoying, time out, which I guess is good. So when you click on the solution, what you'll see on the right-hand side is details about the solution dashboard. Also, how to get to the Azure portal that you actually created, but right here is a pointer to a GitHub repo. So what actually gets done is we actually generate all the code, and all that code is completely open source. So I won't actually go through and wallow through all the code right now, but for anybody who goes back today, goes to IoT Suite and actually generates a solution, you can then go to that GitHub repo, and there is literally all the code. If you find some bugs, send them back. If you have some things you want to add, then do that. That's the first thing. Second thing is, let's get back to, so one of the things we did for build, which is, what, a couple of months ago, is we created a number of what we call these code labs. So code labs are, hey, in 1 hour, what can you do? And so if you go to aka.ms/codelabs, what it'll do is give you a pointer to a pretty large Git repo. And in the Git repo, there's a whole lot of great stuff. So stuff around Unity, stuff around how to deal with data in various ways. But you'll notice there's one here called IoT. So if anybody wants to get going on IoT, this is a great set. There's probably, I think there's like 6 hours worth of content, all the way from the intro, how to actually put your first application on a Raspberry Pi 3, and actually go through modifying and updating your site. So that's for anybody who's kind of interested on just getting going. This is well worth a look, and it just goes through all the different steps of installing your Raspberry Pi for the very first time, configuring it, getting the right OS on, and then connecting to Azure. Cool. So that's the first thing, just to sort of summarize from this morning. So the second thing I thought I would do is just show you some of the basics of the IoT platform and how to get connected with Azure IoT Hub. And the goal here is I want to build a client. This client could absolutely run on a Raspberry Pi or a different device if I have one. I'm going to simulate it on the PC here and then show you how to catch the messages at the back end and then process them, okay? So the first thing you need to do, this is, I guess, the first view today of the Azure portal. So in the Azure portal, I have what we call a resource group. And a resource group is where I put all the different things I need, all the different collection of, say, storage and networking and virtual machines. Okay, in this case, all I've got is one thing, which is this IoT Hub, which I just actually created this morning. So if I go into the IoT Hub, actually, let me just show you. To create one of these is pretty straightforward. I type IoT, select IoT Hub. Create, obviously I need to create a hub name. Number of units. This is interesting. So one of the things that IoT Hub does is you can imagine you have probably, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of devices all coming to Azure at one time. And so the way the IoT Hub and Event Hub works is we have these things called partitions. And these are ultimately scale units that you can use. And you can put up to a million devices onto one particular partition. So by default, it starts with 4. Obviously, depending on the scale, up or down, you can decide how many of these partitions you want to run with. But from a coding perspective, you can either decide to get different receivers pulling off each partition for performance, or you can also do it serially if you want to as well. So you've got choices there. And then finally, you put it on, you place the IoT Hub in a resource group. Again, Amsterdam, subscription, hit go, and you're off you go. So that's how you create an IoT Hub. So as I said, I've got one here, which I've just created. Some things to be aware of when you create it is I go to the key section here, or I go into shared access policies. Obviously, there's lots of security mechanisms, both for the service and also for the devices. I could hit key here, or I can go to here. And I've got different roles for supporting this IoT Hub. If I go to the owner, what I'll do is get a number of shared access keys and also connection strings to this particular service. And to kick things off, I'm going to hit copy here. So that's copied. So that's the first thing. So I've actually got the configuration to my IoT hub that I'm now going to write a program to actually send something to. Next thing that I would do if I'm starting off, like first time around with IoT, is there is an Azure IoT. Explorer. So if you go to the web, there is this Azure IoT Hub Explorer. I recommend for someone doing the very first time, go there. It's an open source project again on GitHub. Follow it down somewhere and downloads. And somewhere down here there is the executable version of that. So I've got this installed on this machine, and I'm going to now run it. So device. Device Explorer. And so the first thing I'm going to do just to kickstart this whole process is I'm going to copy that connection string I've just copied from Azure to here, and I'm going to hit update. And it's taken the settings. I've now made and registered a connection to my Azure IoT hub from the back end side. All the things you can do with this Explorer is you can go into management, and while there is full APIs for you to programmatically create new devices yourself, this tool allows you to do this in a simple way. So I can actually create a device, and we'll call this device first device and something like that. Hit create, and it's already generating obviously some keys to allow that secure communication between my client device, which could be my Raspberry Pi, and the cloud. Hit create. And he's actually generated this device called first device. Now, in reality, you would have your own code that would do this and generate it for the large number of devices you have in real life, but this is good for a first test. I'm now going to copy the connection string for that device. And then, as a last step, I'm going to go into a piece of code. So this is the, hope everybody's following. This is some code I've just put together. And realize that the font is not super large. Okay, a little bit better. So this code itself, the first thing it's going to do is use the IoT Hub client APIs to go and make a connection. And we're actually going to put this connection string in here that we just copied from that device. Okay. So you see that new device name called first device here? Then, a little bit further down, I've got a couple of timers. Let's go down here. I've got a couple of timers. One that's going to be sending information to the cloud. One that's going to be looking to see information coming back for like command and control functionality. So the first one, timer send, is simply packaging up some basic data and just sending it to the cloud using send message. And then obviously the receiver, what I'm doing from a command and control perspective is as I get a message sent back to me, I'm just going to check it and for different colors in the message and then change a box on the screen to be red, blue, or green. So let me run this app. Hopefully it's going to run. That's not good. Okay, I've got lots of device explorers running. Let me just. Okay, so now I can go back to my device explorer. So this is every, I think it was every 5 seconds, it's going to send a random message to Azure IoT Hub. Now, using Device Explorer, just to test, I can go to the data tab. I can click on Monitor. And what it's going to start to do is look through those different four partitions and start pulling the data. So as you can see, just to like prove out everything's working, I can now see all the data that's been sent to that particular IoT hub from my client machine. Okay. So that's quite cool. And then finally, to send things back, again, pointing to the same IoT hub, I'm pointing to this, well, the only device I've actually got created on this machine. I can then type in something like red as the, now, normally this will be a JSON message, but in this case, it's just plain text. And I can hit send. And I think I'm checking, okay, just checks every couple of seconds and is now changing back to red. So this is a pretty simple scenario, but for getting started, it sort of shows you very quickly, if you go to aka.ms/codelabs, you have a raft of great hands-on lab content you can go through. For getting into IoT, and these labs go into a lot more detail, we go into stream analytics, where we then start to check the data streams and send different data in different directions based on its content. We do live monitoring of that data as well, so you can actually get a live graph. It goes through all those techniques, so you can really get a clear understanding of how all this works. Okay. Any questions so far? The address. So the address of the code labs. Yeah. So it's AKA, let me just, so if you go to aka.ms/codelabs. And then you'll get everything you need to go forward. And there's a whole bunch of stuff on Windows on there as well, and all the latest new APIs. So unless there are any questions, I am quickly going to go to slides. Lots of slides. So I'm just going to finish off with some of the new enhancements that we've made in the last month or so. So the first one is the IoT Hub Device Manager. I'm just going to go quickly into how that all works, but that allows you to define topologies for how your devices are managed. It allows you to update firmware, update applications on those devices, all in an orchestrated way. So you can imagine as soon as you get more than 1,000 devices, life can get pretty complex. This really makes that a whole lot simpler. It's all based on open source, so again, you'll probably see a pretty common pattern with all this work that we want to make sure that you can take the code, adjust the code if you want to, and build the solutions that you want. Second one is the Azure IoT Gateway. This was announced at Build, but we've just actually launched a preview, and this is mainly for people who have remote devices in the field. Some of those devices may not communicate with TCP/IP. We handle things like protocol conversion. We also handle management of those devices, but also consolidation of that package of information that then comes back to Azure. We also handle command and control as well through that same model. So again, that's available in preview today, and it's surprise, it's through Git as well, so you can go and take and tweak. Talk about starter kits in a second, and I'll also talk about regions and availability, because that's kind of important when you're not in America. So, don't want to give you too much more information on the device management, but I think I've covered most of that here. We're pretty much open standards based to make sure that we're working with everybody on making this as easy as possible. The interesting thing with updating these small micro devices is a lot of that work, even though we coordinate it for you, a lot of that work actually is delivered by you. You have to do a lot of the fetching of the new BIOS images and actually the implementation of the update yourself. And then you sort of simply then go back to in this case, IoT Hub and say, hey, I've completed my update. So that's the way the standard works, which I think is quite nice. It's quite open and quite clean, but just be aware of that. It's not completely automatic like you get today with like a Windows machine or a Mac machine. So just on the update side, as I was saying, the first one, your code would say, hey, I want to make a firmware update. You would actually build a firmware package for IoT Hub. You would then orchestrate your code on the device to download that package. So it's your code that's doing that. Once you've actually downloaded the firmware, you actually send an acknowledgement that that's been complete. And we show the status of all those updates happening actually in the IoT Hub itself for detail. Finally, once the update is downloaded, you actually apply it. And again, it's down to you and your app code to do that application. And once it's complete, you actually send the update. So that's the process. It's a lot of work involved. We make and provide a lot of the plumbing for that. Just to be aware, if anybody wants to do this, when you create your IoT Hub for the very first time, there is a little checkbox now that's available, so you actually can say, I want this feature actually enabled with inside my hub. So just to be aware of that. So I'm not going to go through the preview. What I do want to do is go through the starter kits. So for people who are interested, just from a maker perspective, or for people, we have put together and worked with a number of partners to put together 5 starter kits for you to get your teeth into. The Thing Dev Kit is probably the smallest thing you're ever going to see. So it's through to probably the Raspberry Pi 2 and 3, which is clearly a larger kind of device. For all of these, if you go to azure.com/IoT starter kits, we'll provide full details of the specs. Some of them do require, like the Thing Dev Kit. You need the Arduino Dev Kit, basically the IDE, to actually go and build for that. It's not something that's allows you to provide managed code. But there are different scenarios, but we've actually put it all together on that site, so you can quickly get an understanding of what's possible and kind of have some fun with IoT. Final thing, and I guess the good thing for Europe is, obviously when we get a new kind of higher level service in Azure, it's not an easy thing. You don't simply just roll it out across the world. There are security regulations, safe harbor regulations, sometimes particularly in mainland China, we have different partners who actually do that deployment. And so the rollout, it has to be incremental. So here's the current plan for IoT deployment across the globe in our different data centers that Kevin was mentioning this morning. So for Europe, we're all available today. Obviously, Japan, Australia, and Germany, and to some degree China, we're still waiting to get that deployed in those areas. But there is a clear timeline that we set to make sure we actually get it across to all these different devices around the world. Okay, so with that, unless there are any particular questions on IoT, I'm going to kind of, yep. So the question was, and I guess we have Q&A now, but so the question was, are we going to have IoT blended into System Center? So I do not believe there are any firm plans for that. As an agent that we'll provide as Microsoft, I will ask that question, but I've not seen from Sam or from the team any plans to do that right now. So, but there is no reason why, because it's a pretty much an open framework, there is no reason why someone couldn't create an agent to enable that to happen, and it may be something they have on their plans. It's not hard. Okay, with that, if there's no more questions, we're going to stop. I think we're going to roll into Q&A. I've noticed that Kevin is not around.
Break.
Oh, okay. So more slides then.
Panel.
Yeah. Do you like my slides on laws? It's the law of IoT. Look, and we find it for you. I like slides. Here we go. See, it's the laws. Everybody likes laws, yeah? So we got Moore's Law. Yeah. We got Kumi's Law, which is basically kind of the same in some ways, which is the amount of processing for the power. And then you've got Metcalfe's Law, which is around network computing and the square root of number of devices connected. So if you bring them all together, it's a wonderful story for IoT. So anyway, with that, I'll stop. And I think we've got 15 minutes, so quarter to the hour. Great. Thank you.
Het grootste tech-evenement van Nederland. Op 4 en 5 oktober in de RAI Amsterdam. Kom naar Tech Days 2016. Bestel vandaag je ticket.